Hello, and happy I am to be with you again. The kidnapping of Charlie Ross remains one of the greatest mysteries of criminal history. Whether or not he lived, the mystery of his disappearance has never lessened in public interest. Here are some of the inside facts of the case. Charlie Ross and his older brother Walter were hailed by two passing men, offered candy and a ride, and childlike they accepted. Soon Walter, failing to get the promised candy, started to scream and cry. Immediately, as he told it later, the men stopped and dropped him, but continued on with little Charles. That was all that the distracted father could learn when he returned to his home in the Philadelphia suburb. A tearful maid was helpless, and Walter was too young to supply a description. The listeners' hearts turned to lead. Frantically, for there was no note, as in the Lindbergh kidnapping, warning the parents to leave the police alone, Mr. Ross sought their cooperation. The usual police methods were followed. Wires sent descriptions of the missing curly-headed little blonde boy across the country. Instructions were issued to arrest and hold any suspects. More, a huge advertisement was inserted in many big city papers. In it, the crazed father offered a large reward, but nothing happened. Ross went to the police and demanded the right to guarantee immunity. His wife added the tearful entreaties of a half-mad mother. But the law enforcement officers were adamant. They were determined that this must not be done. They argued that it would set a precedent and be followed by a wave of kidnapping. Their duty, they claimed, perhaps justly enough, was to protect the majority. And so they pointed out the peace of mind and happiness of the Rosses must not be bought at the price of immunity. Thus there was a split in the camp of the hunters. Too often this is true in kidnapping cases, and too often it is the kidnapper's greatest source of possible safety. They count on it. They know the heartaches, fears, and mental anguish of the parents. They know the police must function for the safety of the majority. Parents nor police can be criticized. Each is plainly right. Parents entitled to any method to return their flesh and blood safely to them, and police entitled to proceed along lines that will not increase the kidnapping record. In the case of little Charlie Ross, it appeared it was to bear fruit. 2 days after the advertisement was inserted in the papers, the frantic father received a letter. It read as follows. Mr. Ross, don't be uneasy. We got him, but no power on earth can take him away. You'll have to pay a big sum for him. If any approach is made to his hiding place, that approach will signal his death. There was no signature. The paper was coarse, brown, like a sugar bag. The rich father decided to do as told. He planned to advertise the reward again. The police blocked him. Then they did a very foolish thing. They offered $25,000 reward contingent upon the arrest and conviction of the guilty. It is obvious that this further complicated the safe return of the little boy, so obvious that it has since been rightly termed an asinine move. But the police excuse was technically correct, too. So strange are some of our laws. Then they said for them to do otherwise would be for them to compound a felony. More technical interpretation of laws, more precedent. Nearly 3 weeks later, during which the parents seemed again and again to be upon the verge of nervous breakdown, a second letter of a long series to follow was received. I quote it. We still have Charlie, so we feel sure of ourselves. We see the police reward of $25,000 for his return, but we see it covers our conviction, too. If they had your worst interests at heart, this was the best thing for them to do. It's the same as offering a reward for the death of your boy. End of quote. That's all there was, and again, no signature. Then the same rumor started that kidnappings always start. The child was said to have been smuggled into England, so pictures of him were sent pretty much all over the world. And then again, one of those weird things happened that seemed beyond the ken of man to understand. One night, the distracted mother dreamed. She had seen her little boy bound and lying in the bottom of a boat calling to her. As you shall see, this mental picture was correct, whether by chance or psychic powers is for each of you to decide for yourself. The thing was so vivid, so real, she could not forget it. She talked it over with her husband. He feared the police would pay no heed, but duty drove him to take the story to Superintendent Walling of the New York Police. There is no stranger coincidence in the history of crime than that meeting. As Mr. Ross unfolded the story, the officer sat wide-eyed in amazement and then startled his visitor with this reply. He told Ross the dream was far from nonsense. He said it confirmed, in several particulars, some things the police had known for some time, and pointed to still others they were inclined to regard as fact while they sought corroboration. Mr. Ross, his heart pounding with new hope, sought details, and Walling supplied them. He said that while there was no evidence on which to hold them, he felt he knew the identity of the kidnappers, that they were searching for them specifically, that they were river thieves, and it would be natural then if little Charlie was tied in the bottom of their boat. He added that they were combing the riverfront and that cutters were searching the bays and ocean shoreline. The marshy lands along the coast near Baltimore were the scene of great police activity. One fact was that the suspected men had boarded an anchored ship during the night at the point of guns, forced the watchman aboard to feed them, and when they left, the watchman naively added, they made him give them some freshly warmed milk. The hunted men never stayed still, though, always on the move through the little creeks and bayous of that section. But finally, as is often the case and seldom counted on by the criminal, a great break came. According to police, literally stumbled in the dark in the swamp upon the pair they sought. A pitched gun battle followed. The night was shot with stabs of flame, and the marshes echoed and re-echoed with the sound of firing. But the police had to wade while the suspected pair had a boat. The beasts of the jungle acted quickly. Before reinforcements could throw an impassable cordon about them, they slipped through. At no time was the little kidnapped fellow seen, but it is most likely they had him with them, for he was worth more alive to them than dead, which, by the way, can always be the parent's greatest comfort. In the morning, their deserted boat was found 5 miles from the scene of fighting, and the first evidence of little Charlie since his disappearance came to light. A toy boat floated in the dirty swamp waters near the larger one, tied to it by a string. Now, this was a real clue. It proved the police were hot on the right trail. Some argued the clue proved, too, that the innocent, sweet-faced little child had won the heart of at least one of his abductors, but perhaps the hard-hearted kidnappers had only fashioned the plaything to keep the child from crying and protect their own necks. This seems more reasonable to me. Strangely enough, this clue failed to increase the efficiency of the manhunt. The quarry had been frightened, well scared, and they scampered to hiding. A series of letters followed. They were couched in filthy language and loaded with dire threats. Unspeakable outrages upon the body of the little fellow were promised, and while $50,000 was repeatedly demanded as ransom, no means to pay it were outlined. One letter threatened blindness for little Charlie. Vitriol, they said, would do it. Then occurred the happenstance that so often ends in the miserable failure of a criminal plan. Fate stepped in to give a subtle twist to the whole affair. For 6 months later, in the dead of night, a Mr. Van Brunt, his son, and 2 house servants were engaged in a pitched gun battle in the underbrush on the Van Brunt estate at Bay Ridge, New Jersey, with 2 burglars who had broken in but been discovered. The hunters literally blew the shrubbery apart as they sought to kill the hiding burglars. A fusillade of shots, then 2 shadowy, low-stooping figures, firing as they ran, bent close to the ground, scuttled for freedom. It was a mad dash, a wild thing to do, but the hunted men did not know that heavy-calibered guns were in the hands of the hunters. As they ran, the firing increased. The 4 men swept the lawn with shotguns, pistol, and rifle fire. The quiet of the night was turned to bedlam. 10 yards, 20, 30. It seemed the fleeing men bore charmed lives. Then one screeched fearfully, stumbled, literally leaped into the air, and plunged headlong and fell in writhing agony. It was plain he was badly hit. The other, it seemed, had melted into the night. But when the group gathered cautiously round the fallen man, their guns before them, they found the other inert, strangely crumpled on the lawn nearby. He was dead. Hastily, they questioned the other, who was dying. He pleaded piteously for a drink. He got it, and stimulated, he talked. While he rallied, he confessed the 2 had stolen Charlie Ross. His name was Joe Douglas. Urged to tell where the child was, he said he didn't know, that his partner, Bill Mosier, had hidden the boy himself, and that he would not tell even him. He pointed toward Mosier, but that worthy lay silent, drilled between the eyes, the edges of the wound slowly purpling, and the back of his head was gone. The dying Douglas moaned in seeming real regret when he learned Mosier was dead, for, as he explained, no man then could know where the little curly-headed Charlie Ross was hidden. Mosier had been cagey and had refused to divulge the secret even to Douglas. The latter had no more than said this much when the rattle of death was in his throat He quivered a little and died where he lay. The news was flashed to a waiting world. It was the end of the chase. The end of the chase forever. The bullet that tore away Mosier's head had sealed the secret of the whereabouts of little Charlie Ross. So ends the fearful picture of the innocent three-year, scared and alone, crying out his baby heart in a wilderness of darkness, waiting, waiting, crying, gradually perhaps growing weaker and weaker until his sighs became the soft moan of a wee soul passing to the great beyond. But let us be more cheerful. It might also be said, in the light of the fact, that little Charlie was found and grew into useful and happy manhood. 'Tis the prettier picture of the two, and therefore I think perhaps the best to accept. Let's do it. And now, do you care to write me in confidence about any problem that may be bothering you or a member of your family, a loved one? I want to help as well as entertain. Send me your worry, your problem. Write me a letter, mark it confidential. Send it to me at my hometown, Laguna Beach, California. I'll spell it for you, L-A-G-U-N-A, Laguna Beach. Write me there, mark it confidential, I'll open it myself, and give the very best I can in an effort to help you in your problem. For I have lived, and I can help, if you'll let me. There goes the rod around the face of that clock. Well, I'll have to stop. I'm sorry. Adios.